and welcome to the Western Bulldogs podcast, Freedom in a Cage, with your host Bob Murphy and Chris Anstey. Chris, very exciting day today. Big, big interview.
Well, it was a little bit flat on the weekend, so we thought we'd pick it up a little bit. Very, very excited about this one.
We're going to move on from the disappointing loss on the weekend, and we're going to welcome the most famous Bulldogs supporter. Sorry, Chris, you're on the podium. Apologies out there to Ernie Sigley as well.
Well, Chris Hemsworth, I would have thought as well. Might be another Chris who's a little bit more prominent than even this Chris over here.
I disagree.
I'd like to think that I'm in between Chris Hemsworth and Liam Hemsworth. At least I've got in between the Hemsworths.
Cop that, Liam.
Yeah. So thank you very much for having me. I did actually say that I would only come on the show after a guaranteed Bulldogs victory, and they said, well, we'll get you in the week after Gold Coast. That one's a lock. Everything will be fine.
Now, I don't want to scare. I know you'd be pretty nervous this morning. Don't know if you're aware of, but the Western Bulldog, our Twitter handle at the moment, we're up to 500 followers at WB Cage. I understand this is your very first podcast you've ever done, so I'm just going to quickly run you through. Just
how does it work?
Basically, what we'll do.
It's like radio on the internet, right?
Yeah.
It's so like just a real show, but not really a real show.
And there's no ads. Yeah. It's amazing.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, not yet. One for the Barker's Cafe. Yeah, delicious coffee.
let's start. We're gonna take a trip down memory lane, I suppose. We're gonna get the arc of your story, and you know, being a Bulldog supporter, and I'm always fascinated about successful people and their footy teams and the story of that. We actually should reference the game on the weekend. Disappointing loss to the Gold Coast, but a pretty positive start to the year. Did you watch the game on the weekend? What were your sort of thoughts? Were you able to catch it, or are you in?
I was able to catch it, but this is the tough thing, Chris, for me, is it's comedy festival season. So what happens is that, because I'm a very emotional football follower, it really affects my mood for the rest. Like when the Bulldogs were going through a hard time, I hated Friday night games. Everyone else was like, we can't get Friday nights. I'm like, great, because at least it doesn't ruin my entire weekend, right? Play on a Sunday at 6. The weekend's at least done before I feel depressed.
It's only going to ruin your Monday morning, and that's fine.
But comedy festival, that's hard for me, because normally the Bulldogs have a lot of sort of Sunday afternoon games, and I have a Sunday early show, so it's a 6 o'clock. So there's rarely much time in between, like, you know, the actual game itself and me having to go on stage. So it can be a real. There's been one very memorable one. Sorry to bring this up.
No, but
you know the one I mean, against Hawthorne, where you did your knee. That was. Like I was walking from where I was staying to the venue, and I think you did your knee on the way. I had to leave, and it was like, A, we lost the game, and B, you hurt yourself. That was one that I had to go on stage. Last week, brilliant. Like that game against Hawthorn.
You're up. You're running on like,
I mean, at three-quarter time, I turned off the game because I was like, I've got to do a show in half an hour, and at this stage, it's going to be
it's too
like,
delicate.
It's going to be like a Nick Cave Q&A. It's going to be a lot of really dark
Let's turn
questions.
The lights down, people.
Yeah, guys, I'm already dressed in black. No intro music tonight. Just going to answer some questions about the rebuild.
I'm going to drink some port on stage.
But I was pretty confident about Sunday. I was like, well, that'll be fine. We're playing the Gold Coast. And yet, I have a personal hatred of the Gold Coast, not the football team. No, there's not much to hate about the Gold Coast football team, but the Gold Coast. I don't like the Gold Coast. The Gold Coast is the only place that when Schoolies comes to town, the IQ goes up. It's a terrible place, and it'll only be made better when they bulldoze the entire thing into the ocean. So I already have a joke about the Gold Coast in my show, but on Sunday, fair to say, really lent into that joke about the Gold Coast.
You really
had some real passion
behind
it. You
really savoured it. Yeah, just to like, use that silence of it. There wasn't much to cheer about. It was close in the end, but it just didn't have a nice feel to it for much of the game. It's another slow start.
Well, and that was the thing that I looked at as a fan, and it's interesting, I'm going to ask you another question soon, but I've always looked at the game, I said, through a fan and a coach perspective, and we don't start games well, do we? And I looked over the last 3 weeks, you know.
Have you got some metrics to run through? Well,
you'd
analytics?
You'd hardly call them analytics.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I would.
But, you know, against Sydney, they kicked the first goal. You remember Isaac Heaney's mark really, really early into the game. You just thought, week one. Hawthorn, they kicked 2 goals in quick succession before we kicked one round two goals. Now this week, of course, against the Gold Coast, we're 3 goals down in the blink of an eye. Round 3 goals. We've got round 4 coming up.
4 down for Hollywood.
Jeez, I don't. I'm not liking where this is going.
Oh boy! No, Freo had it in him for round 21. That's quite a
Fremantle
good,
doctor was you know, real strong
wow,
that day.
That is God, a but, strong
but
Bruce.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to know we can fight our way back, and there are all these Winx references about how we put together our game plan, but we wouldn't want to continue like no, this. So do you, Bob, what's going on?
I don't know, and I think the
we'll make it up.
Well, I was
you're the
I
footy
was,
expert.
I was chatting with someone in the side just yesterday, and you know, the slow starts thing came up, but this is why sports psychology is so interesting.
Are you quoting a source?
No.
I was talking to someone in the side.
I much prefer to quote myself. But it's sometimes we need to start with, obvious thing to say, start well. And that becomes the focus of the week. That can actually make people quite tense. I would just flip it the other way. If you're playing Collingwood, who are one of, if not, you know, the top couple of teams in the comp, just focus on that. That they will bring an intensity and ferocity to the game. You just have to meet that. I think if you start getting into the scoreboard, how that looks at the start, that can bring an inherent tension. But you know, unless we see 4 goals from Collingwood this week, and then I was completely wrong. Have you got a read on it, Will? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'd like to know what they're doing. I'd like to know what they're doing. I mean, well, I can't argue with the stats. I mean, that's the way it is, right? I mean, it's come to the table.
1, 2, 3.
Simple enough that we can all understand, right? It's a pattern. It's a pattern that's emerging, and I hope Bevo's having a word with the boys about this pattern that's been identified. This guy looks, guys, I've looked ahead to round 9. You know where this goes. I'll show you a graph. You can do it on your fingers at this point. I want to know what they're doing just previous, you know, are they in the wrong mindset? Are they easing in, you know?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, to be honest, as a footy fan, I am such a nervous watcher of the game that I actually quite like when we start behind, because I kind of like that idea that we can mow down a team.
Yeah, okay.
But once we get ahead, I get a little nervous about it.
This, we're going to talk a bit about the Bulldog psyche a little bit later, but I think that's
damage.
There's a little bit of scary.
Damage.
We should quickly talk. We talked a lot about Lamb picking last week, but the lap of honour to see him was a fine send off for Lamb. Have you got a thought on Lamb and what he brought to you as a supporter?
He always one of my favourite players. I mean, I don't think it's not a very controversial opinion to say that you like Liam Picken, is it? But that 2016 final series has got to be, will I think probably be, you know, 100 years from now, still one of those final series that people talk about. You know, a player who epitomised probably, you know, everything about that team and what it was doing. You know, a guy who'd gone from being, you know, that sort of tagger to being unleashed and, you know, becoming a whole new player sort of seemed to be the ultimate symbol in some ways of what Bevo managed to do with the entire team, which was make them believe. I've talked to you about this before, but my dad is a Geelong fan, and I think it might have been in grand final week, we had a chat about the game, and he said, do you think they can win? And you know, being a Bulldog supporter all my life, you know, it's hard to get those words out of your own mouth. But the thing I kept saying to him was, they believe they can win. I think they believe they can win, and at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to have to do it. And I think that Liam's final series, more than anything, epitomised that he believed that we could win the grand final, and I think the rest of them believed as well. So for me, that was part of it. But also, he's just been such a great contributor, I think, to the game on and off the field. His family are a really fantastic football family. They have an interest in, you know, beyond, you know, just what happens on the field, but what happens in the AFL community in general. And you know, I think that that family will probably continue to contribute to the AFLM and AFLW competitions, I would have thought, in the future.
Hear, hear. Now, you mentioned your dad. I want to talk to you about Hayfield. So I grew up in Warragul. Hayfield, yes. a bit further down the track.
Further. Go to Warragul and just keep driving.
And just keep on going. Was it Dairy Farm?
Dairy Farm.
Mm-hmm. So what was the? How did the Bulldog influence? Were you a Bulldogs family? How did it get its claws into you?
So we are one of those, you know, families where grandfather, James Anderson, he Collingwood, very much Collingwood, right, and big Collingwood family. So he had a whole bunch of kids himself, and all of the kids were Collingwood families, and all their kids were Collingwood families.
Yep.
And so there was like about 20 grandkids, all Collingwood. So before I knew that you were allowed to pick your own team, I think that, you know, when you get told what your team is, I'm sure I was told that my team was Collingwood, right? But then one day I discovered that my dad didn't barrack for Collingwood. And I was like, I don't understand that. Like, he's the only one out of the whole family.
Yeah.
And I said, why do you barrack for Geelong? And he said, well, I just think it's important that you get to choose your own team. So that was the rule in our house. The rule in our house wasn't that we had to follow Geelong. The rule in our house was we get to an age where we were old enough to choose our own team. And we could choose our own team. So I barrack for the Bulldogs. My brother barracks for the Bombers. My sister's a Saints fan.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's like, quite so we have unusual.
So yeah. From what age did you choose?
And,
so
and why?
Well, I remember, I've told this story before, but the Bulldogs came to my primary school.
Hey.
And
the old community program, huh?
Yeah. Good. Brad Hardy was my favourite player back then because I was a pudgy blood nut, and I identified with him, Chris. I was like, if that pudgy blood nut can play in the AFL, like then I could, like, be a pudgy blood nut who plays in the AFL.
Light bulb me looking at pointing him and going,
Yeah, I was like, well, you know, they always say, if you can see it, you can be it, right? And that was an inspiration to me. And, of course, I wrote an article about that years later, and then Brad and his wife got in contact with me, and now they come and see my shows and stuff. And it's quite nice as an adult to be able to actually be friends with someone who was the reason you know, supported the team in the first place. But, yeah, no, for me it was genuinely that the players coming to the school. I had a mate at school called Jason McCainch, who I saw on grand final day in 2016. Just unexpectedly, we were both at the game, and he and I were the only two people who would who barrack for the Bulldogs,
and
basically.
But you're lucky to have. I mean, that would be considered lucky to have each other in.
Well, but Gippsland was a Bulldog zone.
Oh, that's
that
true.
Was the reason, yeah, the players right, were down players there in the first
Bernie
place.
Quinlan and yep.
But it hadn't translated into kids barracking for the Bulldogs. So we used to sit, we'd play junior footy in the mornings, and then, you know, country football, you know, so the car's driven up to the oval. And then we'd sit in the, you know, Mum's Tarago, the two of us in the front, and we'd listen to, you know, ABC Grandstand, call the footy, and watch the country football. So that was the way that I was raised, pretty much.
I know how hard it was. I mean, I grew up a Tiger supporter in an era where the Tigers were no good. I remember the anxiety of Monday morning if the Tigers had been beaten again, and just that sort of didn't want to go and face the schoolyard of and the sort of disparaging comments. Was there some scarring of those years, or do you remember the bright years and the wins?
Was there a plan B? Second team any stage.
There was a lot of the time where I will say that I was mad at my dad that he didn't make me follow Geelong. Do you know what I mean? Because there was a period of time where it was real good to be a Geelong fan, and I was like, "You couldn't have been one of those." That even when they weren't winning, you were like Gary Ablett, and Billy Brownless.
They were just scoring,
you know, and like Paul Couch, and like these. They'd score 200 points a week. You know, you're just like, I can barrack for these guys. Instead, I'm like on the wing, you know, outside at the Western Oval in the rain, watching them score 9 points till three quarter time against West Coast.
Yeah, Ablett was kind of the Michael Jordan of football. You could have your own team, and also.
Well, I remember the first grand final I went to was 89. So that was the first grand final I ever went to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, me and my mate Mark Howard, who a lot of people know, Howie from the cricket and the footy. The Howie Games, brilliant podcast. And so Howie and I are high school friends, and he's a Hawthorn fan, mad Hawthorn fan. And his family, I went as his sort of friend to the 89 grand final, and I was in the middle of a bunch of Hawthorn members barracking for Hawthorn out of fear for my life. And Ablett.
Kick with the breeze. Yeah,
you know, you were just like, I couldn't help it.
This would be I mean, you were only a young kid, and I'm asking a lot of your memories here, but was there any kind of begrudging respect for Ablett amongst those Hawthorns?
Oh, absolutely. Not disrespect,
like,
but
just like,
fear.
Wow, yeah.
And amazement and just terror. You know, there was all that.
Yeah.
You could tell. They couldn't hate him.
Yeah.
They were just like, he's too beautiful to hate. You know?
That's so good. Who were your Bulldog heroes? I suppose there's, you know, there might be a...
I mean, yeah. So when I was growing up...
Brad Hardy.
It was definitely Brad Hardy. I always had actually a soft spot for Simon Atkins. Again, it might be a redhead thing. I might be a...
Axe.
Yeah. And look, I mean, then... As I got older, I've always been a person who's, I must admit, has loved the club you know, probably more than individuals. Yep. But, I mean, you know, it's hard these days to, like, I realise I've got to that age now. Because you go to get to a certain point where you can be a fan of them, but you also know some of the people, right? You know, yeah. We know each other, and I'm like, I wish you well on the weekend, and yeah. I'm a fan of you playing or whoever else it might be. But at the same time, you're going to run into it, so it's a bit weird to, you know, be at the footy with the, you know, the number on the back going, go, Bob, you know. But now I've got old enough that the kids are young enough to be my kids now,
yeah, right,
that you can go back to being a fan. So when I, like, I do notice that, like, when Bont plays well or Lachie Hunter plays well or any of these, I'm like, oh, the kids are doing well. Yeah. Oh, look at these kids. I want to see Josh Shackey and just rub him on his head and go, you're good, you're giving it a go, mate.
I've noticed I've just tipped over when they talk about the draftees. Think they are children.
Children.
They're like, that's like little kids. I mean, don't judge the day. Just let them, just out of creche.
Mate, he's just a kid. Just,
they're just out of Seriously. Kinder.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Mate, it's first year uni. Yeah. Leave him alone. It's fine.
Well, even in that, you said as you grew up, you've travelled the world, you've been everywhere. How did you stay connected to the club? Because I know for me, I was away for 7 years and it became hard to remain attached to the individuals and the club, especially when they weren't going great. Surely there's some stories from being somewhere around the world trying to find Bulldogs games and stay connected. When
I'll tell you the one.
Might have been easier to not watch games at times.
Well, yeah, it was easier to not watch games at times. But I must admit that I'm also, as a stand-up comedian, there was part of me that, like, much like that, you know, when you got a sore tooth and you know you shouldn't touch your tooth, but you got to keep touching your tooth. I was a bit like that with the Bulldogs. I was like, this is where my real darkness and pain comes from.
You know, like, this is the sad clown.
Yeah, that's right. I need something dark. I don't really have a Hannah Gadsby Nanette sort of moment. So I'm just going to go with the Bulldogs as my darkness. As I was overseas, I liked, actually, I reckon it was more fun almost overseas because there was that real sense of home, like being in London and having to find the pub where they were. And I liked it in those days. I loved it in those days when you actually had to go somewhere, you know, to do it, because then
and
there'd be those.
It.
Right.
Yeah. Have a, yeah, sort of map it out. How am I going
right. to get this to this one of, venue in London that's like an hour and a half away from where I am, three tubes, and then there'd be like three other Australians have also converged on the pub, and you're like,
recognise each other. Good. I recognise madness in that other
Aussie.
Person.
That's it.
I recognise a deep sadness in that person.
But in 2016, I, in preliminary final weekend, so I was living in Sydney. I'd lived in Sydney for a very long time. It's 2016 finals, and so I managed to see the first two games. Absolutely brilliant. Couldn't be working out better for me. But in prelim final weekend, I had booked us to be part of the Los Angeles podcast festival. And the reason that I booked that 9 months before when they'd asked was that I didn't expect to be doing anything on prelim final weekend.
You know what? This is the same story I'm about to tell you as well. Right. I was in San Diego on prelim day as well, and shortened my trip to get home for the grand final.
Oh my gosh.
Right, okay. So
I was exactly the same. Didn't think we'd be
like, oh, I'll be in America. Right. I'll stay for a few weeks. It'll be real fun.
It's hard to find the
AFL. Watch the Cats win another one.
Right. And the irony was, it was the only game it would have been easy for me to get to. Because it was in Sydney.
You could have Ubered.
Like, I could have got a train to the game. Like,
everything else was on the unicycle there.
And I'm on the other side of the world. So I remember doing that gig and going back to my place over there and just sitting alone, you know. Like, there's something weird about just that you're alone. And it's like 1:30 in the morning and you're just having to deal with it all by yourself.
So what lens do you watch a game of footy through? Do you allow the comedian and the observationalist in you? Is that a word?
Sure. I like it.
To watch the game and find humour in stuff ups and find pieces, or do you just go into full fan mode and go, all right, right now I'm not working for 3 hours.
Harder in the Bulldogs. It's funnier than I meant, but I take a free one. You know what I mean? Like, occasionally the ball bounces your way, right? You know? Occasionally you get a free kick that wasn't a free kick and you go, it makes up for the other one.
Yeah,
right? Occasionally you edge one that slips, no one hears it, and you stay. I find it hard to watch the Bulldogs. I'm not one that people always say to me that I'm much rather watch a game knowing that we've won and then sit down and watch the game. I ride it up. People always talk about 2016 grand final day and they say, oh, you must have had such a fun day. I did not have a fun day. I had a horrible day. I didn't breathe for 2.5 hours. You know, took a breath in at the bounce and then just breathed out at the end. Like, that was it though. Like, I have enjoyed it since. You know, I've enjoyed watching it again and celebrating, but I can't say that while I was going through it, it was a fun thing. But yes, watching other teams, and I'm an AFL fan, which I think probably got me through those years when I'm not just a Bulldogs fan. I love football. And in fact, sometimes I love watching other teams play more because there is that detachment where you can just
appreciate the beauty of play and
Like, you know, when Dustin Martin's doing his little one finger and this business, you can go, oh, can't wait for that NAB mini legends ad at the end of the year. Mini Dusty, mini Shane Mumford, mini Jack Watts. It's a real brave new direction. Kids at Oktoberfest.
What about the new race? So, I mean, grand final day in 2016, so that was always going to be an excruciating sort of experience for many of us, but particularly, you know, you who's so passionate. But on a garden variety, bog standard sort of Bulldogs game, how what's the tangible neurotic reaction from it? Is there involuntary movements? Are you yelling and swearing? Are you emotionally eating? What's happening?
Emotionally eating is...
It's hard to do that when you're not breathing.
Yeah. I must admit that it's funny, isn't it? And I think it's part of even how we won, you know, is that we weren't even really the best team in the competition that year. You know, some people just have that, like Hawthorn aren't in the grand final for 2 years and they're just like, what's going on? My whole world feels off kilter. Whereas like the Bulldogs were great for 6 weeks and not bad for an entire season, but it was very us. Like when it went back to us not being in the finals, you were like, man, this actually feels more like what I'm used to. You know, it's like
playing my holidays.
I've had bad hips for 10 years. I imagine when I get them fixed, I'll be like, this feels weird. How I'm not in pain and can walk in a straight line. And it was a bit like that. So I must admit, I wish that I could keep my hope levels up there, but I do go back to just going, oh, we're buggered. This is the whole thing's against us. Like I am definitely one of those people who immediately, my friends don't like watching me watch the Bulldogs play with me, put it that way.
So Gold Coast game on the weekend was a nice little leveler for you. Felt, yeah, this is more normal.
Well, the good news is that nobody wants to watch a Gold Coast game with me, so that was fine. Had to definitely do that by myself.
The universe.
Don't have any mates who are Gold Coast fans. That's the one good thing about losing to the Gold Coast is no one's ringing you up to give you a hard time.
Yeah, the kids are wearing their Bulldog jumpers to school on Monday.
Yeah, it's fine. You'll be fine, guys. No one with a Gold Coast jumper's finally going to go, this is my time.
Can I talk to you about comedy? Because as you spoke before, you're in comedy festival mode. You've been a successful comedian for a long, long time. I'm interested about starting out. So in the sport context, courage is there's many variations of it. Some of them are very obvious. Some of them are very sort of private and have to be sort of searched for. But the idea of starting out as a comedian, for those of us who don't do it, think it kind of takes our breath away of the courage it takes just to step out onto that stage and sort of try. What were the early days like?
I mean, I think in some ways if you... And I imagine there maybe is some parallel to, you know, playing the sport as well, which is that when you're a kid, you're just excited.
Yeah.
You're just you're not really thinking about that, all those things.
Yeah.
Like if I knew then what I know now, I'd be more terrified than I was, you know? If I knew how hard it
blissful
was going to be.
Blissful naivety.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm just having a go.
If I knew that I would dedicate my entire life to something that I will never truly master, that would be the thing that I'd sign myself up for, that every year I wouldn't know whether I was going to be good at it anymore. And every time that I improved, the game itself would get more difficult and it would improve and the people who were around you would get better as well, you would be constantly on this sort of... The early years in some ways were the easy years, you know. Now I feel the pressure of it much
because
more than I ever did.
Because people expect a certain level of...
The pressure of expectation, you know. It's why you never say to somebody, here's a really funny joke, because the minute you've said, here's a really funny joke, their expectations are already up, so high. Peter Hallier used to introduce himself from backstage going, turn off your mobile phones and lower your expectations. It's Peter Hallier. And I always thought, that's such a great way to do it, because comedy is often about that idea of the expectation gap, right? And I mean, I guess it's the same a bit with sport. Once you become a champion of the game, like, you know, if Dustin Martin only gets 25 possessions, everyone's like, oh my God, he's in a slump. This is terrible. We've got to shut down the league.
And you look at, like, Melbourne at the moment, the Melbourne Demons who are, you know, zipping three, and you can't help but think, is that because of the expectation of, although the next step is for them to make the grand final and win it, and it does make you.
So when you first start out, you don't have that. You don't have any of that expectation. You just want to do it. You just want to, you know, get a kick, so to speak, you know? And all your mates come to your first game, you know, like classic, you know? Like all your mates come to your first gig. Never again, by the way. Yeah. Partly to do with how well you go on your first gig. But now the first one was great, you know, like there was adrenaline, you're having a great time, you're suddenly doing, you know, this thing that you dreamed about, you know.
So was how far into, were you thinking, oh, I'd like to do this for a while, or is it just, I'll give it a go? Was it that much, or was it just, am I just overthinking this whole thing?
Well, the Australian comedy industry is a bit like, you know, that transition era between when footballers are like, oh, we played it a bit for, you know, the love of the game and we were getting some money, but we weren't like earning the money that these guys are, and now it's a professional thing.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that with stand-up when I first started. Right. You know, like 24 years ago or whatever, stand-up was like still running away to join the circus. It wasn't this thing now where, you know, oh, you're going to stand up because you want to have a TV career or a radio career or write a book or all these amazing opportunities that are available to stand-ups now. But that was still very much in its infancy. So when I started, that wasn't really what any of us were thinking. It's now become kind of part of the expectation. And I sometimes feel sorry for the, you know, the kids who get into it now, because it has become much more of a, you know, the business of stand-up comedy, you know, whereas like when we started out, it was just, you know, drinking all night and, you know, telling jokes for 5 minutes and, you know, meeting girls and just having a fun time, you know.
Yeah. Talk, can I ask you about the a comedy room that I'm so fascinated by the psychology of what you guys do and hearing story. I mean, it's a famous story of Larry David, who co-wrote Seinfeld, of walking out, looking at the audience and just going, nah. And just walking off because he said they were not my people. And then now that hear other comedians talk about, you know, following a good, like there's all of these moving objects of the mood of the room. What kind of room is it, and what's happening? Do you buy into that at all, or you just go, this is what I do?
No, absolutely no. Stand up comedy. This is the thing that people, and not again, there's no hard and fast rule for everybody, right? Everybody does it differently. But the thing that I would always say to people is the thing that people get wrong mostly about stand-up comedy is they think it's you talking to an audience. It's not. It's you and the audience having a conversation where you do the majority of the talking. But if you're not listening to them, if you're not picking up their social cues, if you're not understanding what it is they like and don't like and have the rhythm of when they want to laugh or how quickly they want to laugh or how quickly you have to speak or when you're being too much or when you're not being enough, if you're not in that rhythm, like it's like surfing, right? You can be a brilliant surfer, but if you're not in the rhythm of the waves on the day,
you're getting that day.
Right? So you have to listen. And that's why, you know, when you watch those shows like The Mentalist or whatever, there's these people who can, you know, it's like they can do, mind reading, and people in the room are amazed. But on stage, if I'm doing crowd work, often if you'd wanted to, you could convince people you were reading minds.
Yeah.
But what you're really doing is just years of picking up body cues and being able to cold read people and get a sense of what people like and what people don't like. You know, when I'm often, people will be like, oh, I can't believe you asked them that extra question and that was where it got to the really funny bit or whatever. And you're like, well, all I'm doing that is, and I'm not consciously doing this, but you just pick up people's body cues.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell if they've got one more left in them, or you can tell if they've gone, this is enough, shut down. And so if you're not listening to the audience, if you're not doing it in tune with the audience, then... But the horrible thing about that is it's sometimes hard to change, regardless of what you've worked out about the audience. The easy bit is going, oh, they're this sort of audience. The harder bit is if they're not what you want them to be, trying to get them to where you want them to be, because sometimes I could tell you how the show's going to go from listening to them when I'm side stage.
Yeah.
Like I can actually hear from the bubble in the room, from the way that they are reacting, the way they're talking over the music, the way they're laughing with each other or not laughing with each other, what the tone and vibe of the entire show will be from me listening to them then.
Yeah.
Now, I try not to then take that on stage and, you know, make it be a self-fulfilling prophecy, but you can tell. Yeah.
So with the comedy festival, is there a... Because I suppose you would now sort of fit veteran status of this. Is there a,
it's true.
So I didn't want to be the first person to say that.
No, you're not.
Oh, that's good. I remember driving down the highway once and the radio came and I torn my hamstring and said, injury prone veteran. I nearly swerved off. I was like, I was not ready. I was like 27. I was like, really?
No, part of my show is about, because I'm 45 now, and one of my mates sent me a message on the morning of my 45th birthday going, welcome to middle age. And I was like, sure. Not. And I had to look it up in the dictionary. It is. Apparently 45 to 65 is middle age. So I'm middle age. I am indeed a veteran.
Wow, yes. There you go. Is there, do you have a certain...
I'm older than my mum was when I started doing the comedy festival.
Wow.
There you go.
That's amazing.
That puts it in perspective.
Is there do you have a paternal instinct with young comedians?
Yes.
Or do you, yeah, you have a... Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, I think that the only way that you can contribute back to the industry that... I mean, this industry has been amazing for me. Like, has given me every single thing that I would have wanted to do in my life has come out of... Yeah, comedy and the comedy industry, you know. Yep. They, even things that aren't directly... I mean, you know, me sitting there on grand final day, you know, in 2016 and, you know, getting to enjoy that week, you know, doing interviews on AFL 360 about it or whatever, all that comes from, first and foremost, from the comedy industry and what I built through the comedy industry. And so all those opportunities connect back to it. The truth of it is that you can't give anything to the industry in general. Right? You can't go, here, comedy industry, here is what I'm giving back to you. But what you can do is give to, send the elevator back down, right? You know, don't protect what's yours and say, this is all for me.
Yeah.
You know, say, how can I help that next generation of people? And how can I be a good role model for that next generation of people? That's really important to me. How can I learn lessons about, you know, perhaps things, mistakes that we made along the way? And how we can, I mean, one of the big issues our industry has faced over the years is that idea that, you know, when I started doing comedy, a lot of the people looked like me, you know, white straight men, you know.
Yep.
Whereas over the last 20 years, it's been, you know, one of those things where we find space for female comedians and you find space for comedians who have different life experiences or different cultural backgrounds. So having an understanding of how the industry treats those people, what the individual challenges that those people might have that I don't have. I mean, one of the most recent ones, we had a great tragedy in our industry where a comedian, a young female comedian, was killed. It was a very big story on the way home from a gig.
Yep.
And it's made us in the industry think a lot about, you know, the idea that a lot of these young women who do gigs at night, often you're not getting paid a lot when you first start out. How do you get home? Of course you walk home after gigs, and you're suddenly in a situation where I've never thought once about walking home, and I do it all the time, you know, particularly when I first started out, you know, you'd walk home from shows all the time. But having that understanding that for other people, for a young lady who's trying to do comedy, that can be... So they've set up this amazing thing through the comedy festival where they've got an Uber account now and people are donating to the Uber account and these young performers can sign up and they can get free Uber rides home for the shows, for example. So I always think when you go, how can I give back to the industry that's given me so much? They're the ways you give back.
Yeah.
You look at, you know, finding people who don't have the same opportunities and helping provide them those opportunities.
Yeah. Do you get a sense at the moment, because we're, it seems to have, our society has gone into this direction of, you know, the outrage community and social media and offset by this political correctness. Do you get a sense that the comedy industry a lot of eyes are going to you guys, because traditionally you guys call it, you walk that fine line of what's okay and what's not with the barb of truth that can make people very uncomfortable.
It's interesting, isn't it, that people, because I mean Melbourne ran through their Mean Tweets banner, which was for a serious cause, but you are setting yourself up in that situation when you then lose, going, gee, that banner's going to be bigger next week, isn't it? Banner might go the whole way around.
I looked at
fresh banner next week, guys.
When they announced, I thought, you know, I'm not sure who would, but they said, we're going to do this for this round. I thought, I'll just check. I know what I'm about. And the first three comments, you know, were, well, why don't you get a win? Maybe that was like, oh, God.
Next week, it's our Mean Tweets banner about our Mean Tweets banner. I think more and more people are worried about what is said and not said. But the truth of it is that people get outraged about whatever you say.
Yeah.
So I think that the position we've really got to look at is, do I believe what I'm saying?
Mm.
That's what I always think as a comedian. I'm like, do I believe it? Is this a joke that I think is worth making?
Stand next to and,
can I? If I need to defend this, would I be happy to defend it?
Yep.
And if I am, I'll say it. And if people don't like it, then that's entirely their business, not mine. But I think that that idea of in the past where you might just say something intentionally provocative and think,
just throw it in there,
think that day has probably passed.
Yeah.
But in some ways, I think that's probably a good thing.
Mm.
Like the idea of accountability to what it is that you're trying to say. But regardless of what you try to say, people will, I mean, I've had, during this festival, I should stop reading my own emails, but sometimes I'm actually quite inspired by the negative feedback. Like, I often get bits out of it. It's like, again, I shouldn't read it, and I'm sure it'd really make the people, like, there's a couple of people
this
year.
What's the big one this year?
Well, so I'm talking a bit about...
Let us into your show just for
a little... Well, I'll give you an example. I'm talking a bit about the changing nature of masculinity, right? You know, and I'm trying to do that in an entertaining way. I talk about the Gillette ad and how they sort of reposition themselves. And anyway, there's a few guys who like don't like me making fun of straight white guys, even though I'm a straight white guy. Felt like it was a pretty safe topic to make fun of myself. but it turns out there's some straight white guys pretty mad about it. And they keep sending me links to Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life, right? And like I got three. Once you get three, you're just like, okay, this is a pattern. I've got to have a look at these 12 rules for life. And I have a look at the 12 rules for life. And the first rule is stand up straight. And like immediately I'm like, firstly, I slouch a lot, so I feel offended. But secondly, I'm like, if your book is called 12 Rules for Life and your first rule is stand up straight, guess what? You only had 11 rules. You have definitely padded out those 12 rules.
Yeah. That's not a wanted something that's a bit more punchy for
that's
one.
That's a Western Bulldogs-like start. As far as I'm concerned, you have your three goals down.
You picked it the wrong way.
Three goals down against the Gold Coast, as far as I'm concerned, if your first rule is stand up straight. So often I like to read those things and then think, oh well, yeah, maybe I'll end up getting a bit out of
something out of it. How are you, so full deck for you at the moment with the Comedy Festival, but you're on with the Comedy Festival and Breakfast Radio. How are you going on there with the combination of you and Luke Darcy, both Bulldog supporters? Does that outweigh one Collingwood Eddie Maguire?
Especially playing Collingwood this Friday night. this week at work and it'll look like in a Triple M?
We had Nathan Buckley in the studio this morning, but Ed was down.
Was that Eddie getting support?
Double date?
No, Ed was down at his beach house doing the show this morning. And so I think Bucks only comes in when Ed's not there. I feel like there might be a restraining order of some kind if they're positioned out of the club. That might be the big untold story at Collingwood, that Nathan Buckley's taken out a restraining order against Eddie Maguire. look, there's been... Buck said this morning he was plugging a wine that's giving away 10 years of grand final tickets. And I said to him, I said, well, guarantee me, how many of those grand finals will Collingwood play in? And he said, 10. We'll play in all 10. And I said, nothing would make me happier if you play in all 10. And lose all 10. That's my ideal scenario, right?
As long as you know. So in retro, you can go time travel and then enjoy each one.
Like last year was a classic example of what it's like to work with Ed, which is that you barrack for... I mean, I think I was... If the Bulldogs couldn't win it, the Pies were such a great story of last year. They were a great team to watch. Yeah. And Ed was just so happy. You know, so for me, just in a work sense, you go in on a Monday morning and he's so happy and excited. So I was really riding them the whole way. I was like... But the one thing that I did need was them to lose the grand final. Because then I knew that we'd just stop talking about it and we would move on. But if they'd won... I would have heard about it every morning until now, probably.
Did you go to last year's grand final? Yeah. Was he in your when it got close towards the end, were your thoughts to I wonder how Ed's coping right now?
I must admit that it did cross my mind. Like, I do have some, you know, human concern. But there's another part of it that's like, it's much better for me comedically if they lose. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already thinking of the bits I can do if they lose. Fair to say, you know, you, on a Monday morning, you're kind of testing Monday morning after the grand final, you're really testing, you know, what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. And I knew he'd been pretty good. And then I said, well, you know, we've got to give you credit for turning up today, unlike Steel Side Bottom on Saturday. And that was the moment where the eye just involuntarily started to flicker.
The
and you're
jaw
like,
just
okay, tightened.
Yeah, okay, that's right, the line.
Okay.
And we're going on ad break.
Yeah, this is Kaysan. You listen to Triple M.
And what about, so you and Darce, both Bulldog supporters, do you, so, I mean, I'm getting a sort of, you sort of scarred by years of you know, underwhelming Bulldog seasons. Do you play sort of positive Bulldog, you know, negative, like what's the dynamic?
Well,
there
is a dynamic there, but as, you know, like you said, I'm scarred, and I'm scarred particularly by a whole bunch of, you know, games and years
and
stuff.
Well, by Darce.
Yeah, exactly. That he was involved in.
Yes.
So it's hard for us to bond over the fact that he's the cause of much of my pain. I mean, I remember the year that he fooled me into thinking he was going to win the Brownlow. I was ready. I told everyone at school.
Yeah, you cost us a grand labour.
I was like, mate, you're so embarrassed that next week when I... He's a bit of a... What I like about Das, though, is he is a 100% Bulldogs apologist. So if I come in and I'm a bit grumpy or if I'm a bit despondent about how things are going, he's always got sort of this unflappable sort of belief and hope, which is, you know, which I do like.
Oh, yeah.
I like his sunny disposition about when I'm going back to the, we're never going to play finals again. This is, you know, and, but he is actually very positive most of the time.
He's got a certainty about his beliefs, doesn't he? I always found that, even playing with him, it was like, with all the uncertainty of what's going on in the game and who we got this week, he was like, no, this, we go that way. And I was like, that'll do. Let's, that sound, he sounds like he knows what's going on. Let's go that way.
Yeah. No, as misguided as it sometimes is, you won't realise until you've got to the place that you were going in the complete opposite direction because you had so much faith in the confidence of the guy who was taking you there.
So can we talk, we'll chat comedy festival. Yep. So are you in the groove of it now? You're seeing it.
It's funny. It well, so this season, so this is the first time in about 15 years that I haven't done any other festivals before Melbourne. So normally I'll do 2 weeks in Adelaide and a few shows in Brisbane. Yep. So I'm normally 15 or 16 shows under my belt by the time that I get to Melbourne.
Yep.
And then it's 20 shows in Melbourne. I started in Melbourne this year, which is the first time in about 15 years, which meant just kind of I felt like I was going into the season a bit without a pre-season.
Yeah.
You know?
You are getting old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You remember how to do it and you hope that, you know, your kind of inbuilt capacity to do it will mean that you can sort of... But it's certainly the first 10, you're like, oh, this feels like... It's a bit different game to game,
Sounds like Buddy Franklin's preseason, doesn't
it? Does, yeah,
just got up for round one.
Yeah, that's basically. I'm getting some form into me by doing shows, but actually, to be honest, that is
sort of
a lot.
What it's
like.
That's go actually, and see in the last few. Huh?
Yeah.
You really have reached veteran status. You've mastered the. I'm just you know avoid preseason. I've got back spasms. I've got some tightness. I'm ready to go.
Can't make it to Brisbane.
I'm ready.
You know
I can't
what?
Quite get to Mackay.
Just get me a couple of preview shows in. A couple of JLTs. And then I'll be right to go.
So the show's called Will Informed,
yes.
And that's become part of the routine as well, mm-hmm. of the Will pun,
yes.
of the. I'd like to know, how many have you got in the bag for future
more
years?
More than I have shows left in me. So I've done 23 or 24 of them, and I reckon I've got another 40 or 50 on a list.
Yeah.
And any time one comes up, somebody will send some to me. Some that are going to be around special occasions. Like, you know, when I get really sick at some stage, I'll have one called Terminally Will. you know, Last Will and Testament, obviously, for the final tour. There's a couple that, you know, through political correctness or whatever are now ones that you are like, oh, I thought Mentally Will would be a good name for a show, but I feel like these days that feels like Wilf, like MILF. Thought that one would be good, but that doesn't... Girls Gone Will. There was a few that, you know.
Well, should we throw that out to our... I mean, I know... So Will's got a lot of them, but I think maybe our listeners might have some...
I'm happy for suggestions too, by the way. Anytime this happens, this is the reason I have 50 on the list, is every time somebody says, what are other Will pun titles, there's always one that I haven't thought of, and so I add it to my list. So I'm very happy if that happens.
Oh, well, that's I think that's a good project for us. We do need some help with our followers. What are we? We're up to 500. It's all about sort of scale here. So we're at 500. Will's at 500,000. It's not a competition, but
if it was, I'd be winning by
heaps. If it was, you'd have a much bigger chance.
I wish it was a competition.
You should, should be sitting 25. Above us like a pharmacist. It should be really that should be the project.
I didn't realise how grateful you should be that I've done this.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by the caravan. It's great to chat. I encourage all Bulldog supporters, but all football supporters and anyone listening to get down and check out Will Informed for the veterans' genius, Will Anderson stand-up comedy. So thanks for stopping by, mate.
Thanks, Chris. Much appreciated.